Yeshurim, just because the content of the daf is a little bit different. I think the last couple of weeks we were focusing a little more on halachic topics, and here is what we would call Agadata, a few more stories. So we'll do our best to try to understand the messages, but you know, over the years, over the generations, many have tried to explain the phenomenon of Gemaras that seem to be, you know, just the word. It's hard to even understand. Forget about what's actually happening in the story, but why did Chazal feel it important for you know, to be put into the Gemara? So one thing to keep in mind, Rav Dessler, who was a master of helping decipher the we'll say esoteric portions of the Gemara and of Chazal in general, said that you have to imagine a little bit on some level. Imagine if you had a time capsule and you wrote a letter, you know, to the future generations or something like that in a lingo and a dialect and a language, and someone opened it up 2,000 years later. So more or less things would be the same, but there could be metaphors, there could be imagery, there could be, you know, phrases, idioms, and, you know, just a language that the people reading 2,000 years ago would not so readily understand without really trying to pick it apart and figuring out the deeper meaning. So there, definitely, you know, it's fair to say that if you encounter Gemara, which seems to be a little bit unusual, it may be because the way it was phrased was either deliberately or not deliberately, you know, to mask a certain message that can only be uncovered with the right effort. So keep that in the back of your heads. But actually, it's a little more on the halacha that we can start off with. We're on the bottom of Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, and if we can make it to the top of Chavavam and Aleph, we'll get back into the normal sugyas. We left off about five lines from the bottom. We had a story of Rav Chaga. Rav Chaga was the one who was chosen to bring the Aron of Rav Huna to its final resting place once it had arrived in Eretz Yisrael. And once he actually was selected for that task, they had another question they had to figure out. We are six lines up from the bottom, right? The last thing we said was, why was Rav Chaga chosen? Because he was the one who had a very close connection with Rav Huna, and he would notice all the little details of his behavior, and he saw once that the straps of his tefillin were reversed, and he fasted 40 days when he saw that that his tefillin were out of place. And we said that doesn't mean the straps that hang over here, probably referring primarily to the parts that actually fasten to the body. Okay, so once they chose him to be the one to bring the Aron, now the question was, where exactly is he going to be buried? So we said he was going to be buried with Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya was a legendary Marbitz Torah. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, I didn't get to it last week, but the Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about how Rav Chiya was careful to get involved in every single step of the process. He would trap the animals that their skin, their cloth was going to be used to write Svarim, write Sivrei Torah. He would trap them, he would shech them, he would process the leather. It was a whole process. He wanted to do it himself because he wanted it to be done with perfection and to invest every step of the way with purity, so that when ultimately he turned it into Svarim, he would hand it out to kids, he'd give it to children who couldn't afford you know, education on their own. It would be, you know, it would be radiating with holiness. If you look in a sefer that's printed today, let's just take a look, see if it works. But in Svarim that are printed in Israel for sure. Here maybe not. Yeah, not so common here, but if you look in a sefer printed in Israel, it'll give a whole long list. It's almost like a hashkacha. You know, if you buy food in Eretz Yisrael, it says there's no concern of tevel or truma and meiser and orl and a whole list of things. It says not printed on paper that was produced with chilul Shabbos. You'll see that all the time. And the obviously in Israel, it's more relevant because you could have a secular Israeli who's working in a plant and a factory, but who cares? Okay, once it's made, it's made. So the answer is that if it's invested with Kedusha, that Kedusha ultimately has an impact on even the reader. Something to be said about that. Okay, so that was...
Is it only things invested with Kedusha? I know my kids, they won't use electricity.
Right, so this goes back for many decades in Eretz Yisrael. This is a controversy. If you go to Bnei Brak, yep. Chazon Ish was extremely fiery about the use of electricity in Israel that's produced in the power plants, which, you know, the power goes out in Queens, so there's some guy who flips a switch and goes back on. But that guy who's flipping a switch in Israel is probably Jewish. So it means
they're throwing off their refrigerator.
He Who's heard about the refrigerator? Oh, yeah, right. In some parts of Israel, in B'nai Brak, either they have a separate generator. This has become more common. The apartment buildings in Israel often have their own generator, so they'll leave the power grid on Friday afternoon. They'll be on their own private electricity over Shabbos and go back to it after Shabbos, which may mean that some of the rooms are, you know, yeah, not powered as, their lights are off. They're more, conservative about using electricity. You're going to get me into a whole, can of worms. Not for now. Okay.
You sure he's right, your son?
This is going on while you're Torah, so watch out, okay?
It's okay. All right. I know that Let's guy.
That was my chavrusa. My chavrusa, okay.
What did you do to him?
Well, clearly it was a good match.
Instead of batteries.
What's that?
So, only batteries on Shabbos.
Yeah, so I remember one Shabbos I spent in B'nai Brak, went into the Chazon Ish's Kolel there, where Reb Chaim Kanievsky learned for many years. And it was 8 o'clock at night on a Friday night, and it was very, very dark. They had, like, these kerosene lamps. And you find some other place to learn that has electricity on a generator. Okay, not for now. So the Gemara says that they brought him to this cave where Rav Chia was buried. 6 lines up from the bottom, the word is Eilei. Eilei means they brought him in. They brought his Aron into the cave. Now, this is going to sound a little bit strange. Havagani Yehuda miyamine davua v'chizkia mismalei. Next to Rav Chia's burial plot, was Yehuda on the right side and Chizkia on the left side, the two sons of Rav Chia. It was a family plot. Amar le Yehuda l'chizkia. So Yehuda, this is coming from the afterlife. Yehuda says to Chizkia, gives him like a little elbow, says, Kumi duchtech, get up from where you're lying. Rav Huna is not at rest yet, and you're sitting here lying in your burial place. Get up. So evidently they recognize that this was, a makom for giving kavod to another deceased Talmud Chacham, and they moved. Somehow they moved. I'm just reading through the words. They moved. They got up from their, where they were buried to make space for Rav Huna to be buried in the place where they were buried. Bahadi dekoyim kam bahadei amuda denura. When he got up from his resting place, a pillar of fire emerged. Chazi Rav Chaga, who was there in charge of the kura, saw this fiery pillar. Ibois, he was scared. Zakvil arone, and the only thing he could do, protect his life. This fire was coming in his direction. He took the aron of Rav Huna and put it, standing up to sort of block the way, and he ran out. V'nafik also, he ran out of the cave. V'hai d'lo'yanish anish mishum d'zak v'l'aroni d'ra'av huna. The only reason he was saved from this fire was because he protected himself by putting Rav Huna's aron in between. So we don't know exactly what this means. Again, this is an example of a Gemara where there's clearly a deeper esoteric meaning, but on a level that we can connect with a little bit. The Meiri states that you learn a practical halacha from this story. Number one, we know we try to avoid exhuming bodies and moving them when we can. Obviously, there's exceptions. There are many bodies that were taken out of Europe after the Holocaust, because, obviously the burial was haphazard. It wasn't appropriate burial. When we can increase the kavod, so that's one thing. When, every once in a while you read in the newspaper, it could be in Vilna, it could be in parts of Poland, the local government is building a highway, and they're just digging through the Jewish cemetery. And there are organizations that put a lot of money into protests, and when they're not successful, they try to move the bodies to somewhere else. But normally we try to avoid that. For Talmud Chacham, again, if we can increase the kavod, so then it's justified. How do you see that? From the fact that Chizkia got up from where he was lying so that Rav Huna could be buried in his place. However, this is the line of the Meiri. This is fascinating. The Meiri says, despite the fact that they recognized that this was important, Mikol Makom Lo Hutra El Bekoshi Gadol, it's still something that's only permissible Bekoshi. How do you translate that? With reluctance, with difficulty. The fact that this fire emerged is symbolic of the fact that, there's a phrase, Yiras Onish Gachaltam Shal Tamid Chachamim. The honor due to a Talmud Chacham is like a fiery coal, and you have to be careful so you don't get burned. And it reminded me of there's a mission in Pergei Avos. Mission in Pergei Avos says, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Havim Mischamim Keneged Oron Shal Chachamim. You should warm yourself by the light of the Chachamim, V'avizor begachaltan shel tichva. But the other side of the coin is make sure you don't get too close. Make sure you don't compromise their kavod, because then you can all, you know, you get too close to the fire, you get burned. It's very, I found this to be a challenge personally. Thank God I spent many years in YU and many years close to my Rebbeim, and it's an opportunity to give a lot of kavod and learn a lot. But there's a reason why we also try to achieve some sort of healthy distance. Because, and I've seen people fall prey to this. You know, you spend too much time with Talmud Chacham, you start imitating him, you start, you know, joking around. Like, you can't be too buddy-buddy with someone who's, you know, who's on a level which warrants, you know, a very particular type of respect. And so I think that's what the Gemara is trying to illustrate to me, he says. Interesting lesson. Right, Rav Huna was from the Reish Kulusa, so he had a special protection. I think because the Gemara says it was the fact that he put Rav Huna there. Rav Huna's Chus. I think so, yeah.
Is that part of people addressing Rebbeim in the third person?
Yeah. You know, in theory, we would talk to our parents like that. We assume our parents are mochel. Our parents give us a break because it wouldn't be so practical. But you're right. It's a challenge, you know. And as a Rebbe, you play ball with the guys. You want to be friends with them a little bit because you have to be able to relate to them. But there's a line that you know, sometimes you have to be careful.
You know, the third person.
No.
In the Hebrew, you never address a teacher as you.
Right.
Yiddish, also
right, you always them, right? You always do it in the third, right? Okay, that's how I grew in elementary school in seventh, sixth grade. That's how they told us to talk to the rabbi.
Not long as a biff.
Okay, let's continue. So the Gemara says now we're three lines from the bottom. Second word of the line, Kinach Nafshei, Rav Chisda. Now we're next generation. Rav Chisda was a student of Rav Huna, and now we're talking about when he passed away. So they suggested, like we spoke about last week, they were going to place a Sefer Torah by his bed, as if to represent you know, what he accomplished during his lifetime. Rabbi Yitzchak nixed that idea. We already established last week, right, that this is something that his Rebbe, Rav Chisda's Rebbe, Rav Huna, we said, no way, right? Rav Huna was careful. If he saw a sefer on a bed, he made sure to move it and put it somewhere else, so he would not be sitting or lying on the same level. Okay, so end of that that point. Then, Savard lo mishlo karaihu. After the levaya, so all of the talmidim tore kriya, right? Because that's the halacha if it's your rebbe, and they assumed, you know, we probably shouldn't tear kriya. I'm sorry, we shouldn't repair the kriya. We shouldn't re-sew the part of the garment that was torn. Okay, that's the halacha by a parent. If a person loses a parent, you can't put it back together in any way whatsoever. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami, no. Chacham kevan shechziru peneihem me'achorei hamita sholon. Once, at the funeral of the Talmud Chacham, once everyone turns away, they've placed the mita, the aron, in the ground, and they buried the mace. After that point, one can close up the part of the garment that was torn. So we don't find the same, we'll say, severity of the observance of the avelus or the kriya as you would for a parent. Tosfos actually points out, interesting, he says there's a girsa that says that this halacha, right, the story is not incidental. The story is talking about all the talmidim of Rav Chisda who they themselves were talmid chacham. And he says, according to one version of the story, what that tells us is that this is really a special dispensation. In reality, we shouldn't treat the kriya of a rebbe any different than the kriya of a parent, unless the person doing the kriya himself is a talmid chacham. Why? Because we don't want the talmid chacham walking around with his own clothing torn. Right? There's a they teach you when you're in yeshiva that you have to tuck in your shirt. You know, you don't walk around with stains on your clothing. Because you represent Torah. A Ben Torah represents Torah. You're a Shiva student. You're the Talmid Chachamim of this generation. So you have to present yourself in a way that brings honor to Torah itself. So to have the Talmid Chachamim unnecessarily walking around with Torah clothing, and remember, they didn't always have more clothing to put on. This is what they had. So that, according to that version, this is something unique to Talmid Chachamim.
Didn't say something with Talmid Chachamim?
Yes, Chayim Misa. Yeah, that's right. Take it very seriously. Yeah, I take it very seriously. Kinach Nafshei Rav Bar Huna, Rav Hamnuna. Okay, another funeral. This was the funeral of Rabbi Bar Huna and Rav Hamnuna. They both lived in Bavel, and they died at more or less the same time. Askinu l'hasam. They brought each of their respective aronos l'hasam. What's hasam? Over there, Teretz Yisrael. Okay, from Bavel. Tapu chaf hei amabez. The Gemara says, Kimatu agishra. As they were traveling, these two funeral processions, they got to a gesher. Kolom kulo gesher tzamo. They got to a bridge. Right? To get the bridge, you can only pass one at a time. So, kamu gamli. The camels that were leading the aroma that were bringing the wagons along, they stopped. Amruluhu hu taya, a taya is always an Arab merchant or tour guide or someone who was leading the caravan. So he said, what's all this traffic backup? He was in the back and he was trying to figure out why they stopped moving. My high, what's going on? Amrulei rabbanan dekaavdi yikara adadi. So they told him, this is. We stop because the Talmid Chacham are giving honor to each other, so no one wants to go before the other. So that's why we're in a traffic jam. Mar Amar Mar Neil Bereisha Umar Amar Neil Bereisha. One is saying you're the master, you're the Talmid Chacham, you should go first. Or his Talmidim were saying that whoever exactly was speaking on their behalves, they couldn't figure out who should go first. Amar, so now the Arab guy, he decides to weigh in. He wants the paskin. Dinahu de Rabba Barhuna Leo Bereisha. I paskin. The din is, the halach is, we give kavod to Rabba Barhuna for him to go first. Leo Bereisha, let him go first.
How did he know?
Okay.
Did he know who these people were?
What's that?
Did he know who these people were?
Apparently, so what's the reasoning? So the reason why he said that he should go first is because Rabba Barhuna was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik. A Talmud Chacham, the son of a Talmud Chacham. As opposed to the other one, which is Rav Hamnuna, his father was not known as a Talmud Chacham. So a tzaddik, a Talmud Chacham, son of Talmud Chacham goes first. Where do we see this? Last week's parsha, right? In Parsha's Toldos, it says that Yitzchak and Rivka were both davening for children, and Hashem gave extra attention and answered Yitzchak's tefillos first because he was a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Now we don't want to put down people like Rivka who achieved a tremendous accomplishment to come from a house of a Rosh and still be a tzaddik, but.
So
still has a special school.
It's not just any Arab merchant. This is somebody who knew the families. They probably used them for business.
Okay.
The Shabbos guy.
Could be. But he may have had an ulterior motive. The Ben Yoyada, not a coincidence. Ben Yoyada, that's the Ben Ishchai. Ben Ishchai was one of the most important Sfarik Halachic authors in the last couple hundred years. He was the Rav of Baghdad. He also wrote a sefer specifically on the commentary of the Agadat of Shas called Ben Yehoyada. So he says there's something else going on behind the scenes. He was from Yishmael. Yishmael's father was Avram. Yishmael wasn't the biggest tzaddik. Avram was a big tzaddik. So he said, let's capitalize on the fact that, even if you're not such a big tzaddik, if you have the schus of your father, so you cash in on that also. And that's why he was pushing, because they want to have an equal share in the legacy, so to speak, of Avraham Avinu. So he was emphasizing the schus of the father also. What happened? Yeah, Gemara says that Makom Shabali Tshuva Omdim Afilu Tadikim Gvurim Ein Michom Lamod. Right. So right, there's some 100%, but it could be though when it comes to Tefila, so Hashem still the combination of the schus avos still counts. So it's not putting down the Baal Tshuva in any way, but it means that there's still something that that the other one has in his accounts. Okay, so the Gemara says Cholav Gamli deRabba Barhuna. They listened to him. Okay, so they took his word for it, and the camel of Rabba Barhuna went first. Nasser Kiche Vishine Duhutaya, and the jaw and the teeth of that Arab guy fell out. Okay, so this was some sort of punishment. Why he was punished in this way, why he was punished altogether. So the Mepharshim say probably because who are you to decide you're going to get involved? So yeah, so even though he may have been right, but it was not his place to put one Talmud Chacham over the other. Mm-hmm. And this was the way that they showed it, Min HaShemayim, that he shouldn't be paskening in front. All the Talmud Chacham were there. Let them decide. It's not his business.
The fact that they listened to him, they should have been punished.
So... That's what I'm saying. He may have been right. They are entitled to an opinion, and they can make that judgment call if it appears to be correct to them. But the troublemaker in the back of the room, if he raises his hand and tells the Rebbe what to do, so that in its own right is a mistake. That's overstepping his bounds. He shouldn't have gotten involved in this conversation, even if he was right. That's the key. We spoke about Shmuel a couple weeks ago also, right? He was a two-year-old kid who paskened in front of his Rebbe, the Kohen Gadol. He was right. He was 100% right. They followed what he said. But he was still Chayav Misa because it's not his place. Not his place. Yeah.
Cause embarrassment to Rav Hamnuna.
Right, right. So someone was gonna cause embarrassment to somebody. Right? Inevitably, someone was going to lose out. Right? That was the challenge over here. That's why they came to an impasse. No one wanted to be the one to put Rav Hamnuna down. So, and he said, I'll be the one to put Rav Hamnuna down. Okay.
The footnote here says that Batsavis Moshe says that he wasn't even putting the category of Rav Hamnuna's father as a man.
Aha. Okay. So according to that, it was Rav Hamnuna's father that was disgraced. I mean, whoever Rav Hamnuna's father was, he was still much better than the Arab guy.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Pasach Alei Ahu Yanuka. Okay, so now Pasach Alei usually refers to, I think we saw this last week also, that means that someone began a hesped, began to eulogize. Okay? So, Ahu Yanuka. Interesting that the Gemara points to the fact that he was a young child. Okay? Yanuka, like a yonek, is a nursing baby. So, it doesn't mean it was a baby. But it's an expression, you know, the Gemara sometimes says, Girsa diyankasa. Girsa diyankasa is an expression, the things you learn when you're young, you don't forget as easily. So here you have this young child, and he begins to offer a eulogy for these two Talmidei Chachamim. Geza yeshishim ala mi bavel, v'imo sefer milchamos. Geza yeshishim, geza is a trunk, right? Yeshishim of older, experienced, veteran rabbanim. So that refers to Rav Huna, let's say. Right, as he came from a long line. He inherited, his stature from his parents, from his father. He came from Bavel, the imo sefer mochamos, and he brought along with him Rav Hamnuna, a sefer mochamos. You know, in the Torah that refers to like the chronicles. The kings used to record, the wars that they fought and everything that they accomplished. Sefer mochamos. So that's metaphorically we refer to the mochamta shel Torah, the back and forth, the shaka b'tayra, fighting out. The sugya to try to come down to the truth is always referred to as the milchama, and Gemara says that when you can even have a father and a son who are yelling and screaming about a sugya, and in the end they're friends afterwards because there's no animosity. It's all about the search for the truth. Someone wrote an historical account of the Mir yeshiva escaping from Europe through Shanghai. Through Russia on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. Whatever the days and days they were on this train until they got to, close to Japan and then China, Japan. Okay. So there were plenty of non-Jewish, passengers on the train. And here you have hundreds of yeshiva students. They never saw anyone like this, before. And they what they recorded from that experience was all these guys spending all day yelling at each other. And then they took a break and they would sit and eat lunch together and schmooze and they'd all be friends. And then they'd go back and fight again. Couldn't understand it. That's the Mochamta Shel Torah, the search for the truth. Kos v'kipud huchpulu, liros b'shod v'shever haba mishinar. So again, he's speaking very metaphorically, poetically. Darkness, double darkness has descended upon us to see the shod v'shever, the broken disaster, the tragedy that now comes to us from Shinar. Shinar is a synonym for Bavel, right? The first time Bavel appears in the Torah, the Migdal Bavel, it says that they traveled to Shinar. That was the region where Babylonia was located. That's where the tower was built. So that refers to Bavel, where these Talmidei Chacham came from. Kotzaf al olamo, the chamas mimeno nefashos. Now shifting the focus to Hashem. Hashem kotzaf al olamo. Ketzaf refers to anger. Hashem sometimes takes away Talmidei Chacham and Tzadikim because the generation doesn't deserve it. So it's a moment to reflect on the fact that it seems like Hashem is angry, especially we lose two Talmidei Chacham at the same time. Chamas mimena nefashos. Chamas, right, is a way to refer to robbery, to thievery. So to speak, Hashem, again, just a metaphor, Hashem grabbed these two holy souls from us and took them away. Some say it's not referring to Hashem, it's really referring to the Malach HaMaves, because it feels like we've been robbed. Gentlemen, we've been robbed. That's the title of a book. Yeah, so we lost these great leaders. The Samach Bahem Kekal Chadasha. But there's a joy. In Shemayim, there's a joy, like a Kal Chadasha, like a new bride. Rochev Aravos, we say this in Zmiros, right? Rochev Aravos, Melech Olamim. Rochev Aravos, Hashem is the one who rides upon high in the heavens. Sos v'sameach bevo elav nefesh naki v'tzadik. Hashem rejoices, sort of an interesting dichotomy. Hashem doesn't want to take the tzadikim from this world, but he still derives some sort of pleasure by having them join him up in Shemayim. It reminds me of the story of Metzia. Rabba Bar Nachmeni, I think it is, his life was taken because he was needed to answer a question in Shemayim. In Shemayim, they can't pass on any shaylas because lo b'shamayim he. But there was an individual who they felt could answer could resolve the debate. So they took his life, but before his neshama departed, he paskened, and then he went up to Shemayim. So here you have an example of where Hashem rejoices over the coming of the tzaddikim. And interesting, the way that the Gemara phrases it, bibo elav nefesh, when there is a neshama, when there's a soul that comes to Shemayim, naki v'tzadik. Seems to be extraneous. Why are you doubling the lashon? So Ben Yoyada says Naki refers to Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and then Tzadik Ben Adam L'Makom. I saw another very interesting pshat. I think it's quoted from the Sefer Einei Yitzchak. He says as follows. He said the Rambam, in addition to his Mishnah Torah, he wrote a commentary on the Mishnayos. When it came to Pirkei Avos, he wrote an especially long introduction called Shmona Prachim. Eight chapters long introduction to Pirkei Avos. And he quotes there a medrash, and I think maybe he made it famous. It's one of the important sources where this medrash is brought, which basically asks the question, what are you supposed to think? What are you supposed to think when you're doing a mitzvah or when you refrain from an aveira? When you walk by, Burger King, when you walk by McDonald's, and there's a burger that where the juices are dripping and, it's smothered and, all your favorite toppings, and it looks really good. And you keep on walking, and you go to, you go somewhere else, right? So what are my options? Either I should say, Hashem, I really want to have a cheeseburger right now, but you told me not to, so I'm not going to have a cheeseburger, and I'm going to have something kosher. Or you can say, no, if it's the will of God for me not to eat a cheeseburger, then I don't even have any desire for a cheeseburger. Both of them seem to be very virtuous attitudes. Which one is right?
Oh, Rashi goes with the first.
Okay, so Rashi talks about this in Chumash, but the Medrash basically differentiates between two types of mitzvos. There's mitzvos that are logical, that we can wrap our heads around, and the mitzvos that are not. Like shatnas. No one really knows concretely why it is that you can't have wool and linen mixed together. It doesn't seem to have any, logical explanation. And then you have mitzvos, okay, kibud av v'aim, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to have hakaras hatov to your parents and respect them. So if it's a mitzvah, that doesn't really make any sense. So that's when you're supposed to say that, well, let's go the other way. If it's a mitzvah that does make sense, so what would you say? What would you say? If it's a mitzvah that does make sense, what should be my attitude to it? What's that? You have no desire. If Hashem can give me a commandment that speaks to me, then it means I'm supposed to inculcate that attitude. And if it makes sense if Torah logic requires you to honor your parents, then I'm supposed to adopt that as my attitude. But if the Torah says something which I can't really speak, I don't know why I can't have a cheeseburger. So then I'm supposed to say, I want to eat it. I can't even understand why I shouldn't eat a cheeseburger. But Hashem, because you told me not to, I'm not going to. So what's the difference between Naki and Tzadik? These two different dimensions, these two different categories. Naki is someone who has, I have no interest, no connection whatsoever. A Tzadik is someone who has the desire and has the power to overcome it. So here we see the praise that is being given for those two types of righteous people. Kinach nafshei d'Ravina, we're five lines up from where it gets wide, in the middle of the line. Kinach nafshei d'Ravina, when Ravina died, pasach alehu savdana, a certain savdana, that means a professional eulogizer. This used to be a job, okay? As we've been saying, I guess this was a job for a nice Jewish boy, apparently, What was that? A barchen, yeah, okay, I guess so. Barchen for the dead, okay. So this was a professional, probably one of the reasons why they hired people was because you can't count on every shul rabbi to be to give the greatest eulogies. It's really something very serious. We find sources that the hesped helps save a person from judgment and Gehenna. If someone is able to accurately paint a picture of what this person represented and his legacy and teach other people to learn from that model, so that's a schus for the nefter. That's one example of where there's a great virtue if it's done right. So they. Yeah, and you have to be careful. You can't really, you can't exaggerate. There's limitations. Every once in a while, though, you have a gadol hador who says, "Don't make a hesped on me." Probably the most famous example was the Pnei Yoshua. Pnei Yoshua is one of the primary commentaries on the Gemara, and he said, "Don't make a hesped for me." The Noda Behuda, who was also himself a towering giant, so he accepted the Pnei Yoshua's instructions. Every once in a while, there's a discussion in the poskim: should we listen? Should we not listen? Just last week, it was on the cover of one of the newspapers. I saw it, outside of the office. A great rabbi by the name of Revival Cohn passed away. Yeah, you're familiar. He was a Rav in Brooklyn. I have seven or eight of his farm in my office. Very well known. Really, he wrote encyclopedic works. And he was very quiet. It was to himself. He had a shul, but wasn't on center stage. And he left instructions that no one should make a hesped on him. And whatever his reasons were, but they listened. They listened.
I knew him in his youth.
You know, really?
I remember
Chaim Berlin. Yeah. So what do they do at the Levayah? What do they do at the Hasbeidim? So a couple of his svarim have introductions written by Rav Huttner. And they read Rav Huttner's praise already 50 years ago when he was a young man. Rav Huttner said, "As soon as I met you, I knew that you were destined to be a great man." And they said, "Look, we're not adding anything to what's already been published." And they felt that was still in consonance and still maintaining the instructions he left behind. So the Hesped's a serious business. So what was the Hesped that they said about these Hamilcham? Temorim haniu rosh al tzadik katomer. The palm trees, the date trees, should bow their heads, right? We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago in the Drasha. Palm trees are some of the tallest trees. They're very, very tall, skinny, and they sway in the wind. Bend your heads to pay respect to a tzaddik katomar. Tzaddik is also referred to as a tamar in the Pasuk and Tehillim, so that would be a way, again, in a poetic way, he was acknowledging the loss. Nosim leilos kiyamim, al mesim leilos kiyamim, and let us make night into day over someone who himself made night into day. Rashi says what that means is we should continue mourning over him even in the middle of the night, just as much as we would do during the daytime, because he spent his life turning night into day, because he would learn constantly 24 hours a day. Others say, what's that?
Who put this in here? He was the author of the Gemara, Ravina.
Ravina, right.
Oh, so who was left to put it in?
Oh, no. So Ravina and Rashi were not the, doesn't mean that they were the last people.
Okay, so
yeah.
The
Could be. I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure that's, could be that these parts of the Gemara, if they don't have the same codification. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it had to be bound. We'll see. Rav Ashi is coming up next, so hold on. Okay. So that's one chat. The Meshech Chachma says that it's talking about in general. He learned day and night, and we should also learn day and night. Rameir Simcha, the author of Meshech Chachma, says in a different place something very interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was on Har Sinai, he learned 40 days, 40 nights, the whole Torah. How do you know if it was day or night? He was in Shemayim. So it says that he knew based on what Hashem was teaching him. Half of the time Hashem taught him Torah B'Chsav, half the time he taught him Torah B'Alpeh. At night he would learn Torah B'Alpeh, during the daytime he would learn Torah B'Chsav. Again, we're not so careful about this nowadays, but Kabbalistic sources, and this is brought down in mainstream places, suggest that we shouldn't learn Torah B'Chsav at night. Only Torah B'Alpeh, based on the original way in which Torah was communicated. Why that is, again, definitely Kabbalistic significance, but it could mean that what's being said over here is Ravina turned night into day. He turned the learning of Torah Shabbal Peh into something that was accessible for, as you said, Ravina and Rav Ashi. They were the ones who put together the Gemara so we could learn it. So it could be there's also a metaphorical explanation over here that refers to another thing that he accomplished in his life, which is the redacting of the Talmud. Which, by the way, one of the reasons I want to share that with you is because, as we go through these Hespedim, there's a lot of metaphors, a lot of poetry. But it's very, very deep. We're just offering one or two different levels of interpretation. But another reason why it was important to have a professional person giving a hesped is because we're talking about people who could communicate on so many different levels simultaneously with the words that they chose. Okay, good? Ready? Here we go. All right, so two lines up from the wide lines. Amar le Rav Ashi le Bar Kippuk. Rav Ashi met Bar Kippuk. Bar Kippuk was one of these professional maspidim. Hahu yoma, on that day, that's how Rav Ashi referred a veiled reference to his own death. On that day, when I pass away after 120 years, my Amrus, no, what are you going to say about me? Okay, so I'm not going to even answer right now, but that's something to think about. Why was Rav Ashi asking this question, right? Yes. We try to encourage people, right? That's something Rabbanim will mention. You have to think about what they're going to say at your funeral. Think about what you're going to be remembered for. But this is the other way around. Rav Ashi is asking, what are you going to say about me? Okay, I'll leave that open for you to think about over the course of the week. That's come up later. That's a few lines. Yeah, we're not there yet. Okay. No problem. Okay, Hu Yoma, my Amr. So what are you going to say? Amarle, I think the greatest part of the story is that Bar Kippa was ready. Like, he already had his notes prepared for Ravashi's death.
You know?
It's like the Times has the archive.
Yes, yes, it's all right. The obituary is all set. Okay. But this also shows you he's a pro. You know, he was ready to go.
Somebody's okay. Good enough. They all keep alive. They're ready to go.
Okay, okay. Amarle Amina, this is what I'm going to say. Im barozim nafl shal heves, if upon the cedar trees a flame could fall, okay, mayasu ezuvikir. So what are we going to do? We're like little grass growing on the side of a building. Leviathan bechika hoala mayasu degerakak. If the Leviathan, the Leviathan, can get caught in a net, in a fisherman's net, so what are the little fish swimming around in the pond going to do? But nachal shotev nafalchika mayasu megivim. If a flowing river is stopped, is dammed. So, you know, what about the little puddles? What are they going to do? Okay, so again, on the simplest level, this is, you know, if the great tzaddikim are taken away from us, you know, then what hope do we have, the little people? But you can rest assured that a lot of ink has been spilled on the deeper meaning of these metaphors. Amarle Bar Avin, so Bar Avin was sitting there. Bar Avin was his partner. He's another professional masbit. Chas v'shalom. You can't say that about Rav Ashi. Chas v'shalom, the chika v'shal heves b'tzaddiki. Are you going to, you know, oversimplify? You're talking about Rav Ashi, one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim, and you're comparing him to a net and comparing him to a flame. It's not appropriate. So my Amris. So Rav Ashi, okay, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? Amina b'chul avelim v'lo la'aveda shehila menucha v'anu la'anocha. It's almost a rhyme over here, right? So he said, what I'm going to say is, you avelim, you mourners, you should cry, but not for the Aveda. You should be crying for yourself and not for the individual who was lost, because the individual who was lost is in a better place. He l'menucha, he's going to Gan Eden. Don't worry about him. Anu l'anucha, but we're the ones who are suffering. Mm-hmm. We're the ones who are suffering. Cholesh daite alayhu v'z'apuch karayhu. Rav Ashi was not happy with either of the things that were said about him. Again, why that is so, the Mefarshim discuss what the issue was. Could be that both of them suggest, what's that?
Rashi says one compared to a flame, one compared to a lost object.
Right. So both of them are they're temporal, they're passing, they're fleeting. You know, a neshama is something which is eternal. Mm-hmm. So to use you know, simple objects in the same breath as talking about the neshama is a terrible mistake. Okay. And so what happened to them when Ravashi got upset? Is hapacharayu, their feet flipped around. Okay, what that means is that the bottom of their foot, the soles of the feet reversed and were now above, and the top of their foot was below. Okay, again, very deep symbolism over here. You will get a little taste of it in a second. Hahu yomas, when that day finally came, that Rav Ashi passed away, Lo asulas pude. They did not come to attend and to eulogize. Some say because they couldn't get there. Their feet were broken. They just couldn't get around. Others say, you know, it was a little bit uncomfortable. They learned their lesson. They already got too close. You know, this is like what we said earlier. V'hainu dam Rav Ashi lo bar kibbutz cholitz lo bar aven cholitz. The Gemara says that Rav Ashi, you know, when he was giving shiur on Yevamos, and he would talk about chalitza and the procedure for the shoe and taking off the shoe, so he would make them into an example. He would say, these two people, Bar Kippitz and Bar Avin, they're puzzle for chalitza. A woman could not perform chalitza on their feet because they had this deformity, whatever, that came as a result of it. Oh, me'al raglo, right? It has to be taken from the foot, from on top of the foot, and their feet no longer reflected the way they were supposed to present themselves. Okay. Let's go a few more minutes. Rava ki hava asal diglas. Rava was traveling. He got to Diglas. Diglas is the Aramaic version of Chidekel. It's one of the rivers that was flowing from Gan Eden. Talks about it in right Tigris in Bereishis, coming from Gan Eden. Amar Leila Bar Avin. So this is the same Bar Avin as before. Bar Avin apparently, again, he was very poetic. So Rava, they were at this dangerous crossing of the river. So he wanted Bar Avin to Kum Eima Milsa, go say something, meaning Davin, because the way that you can present, the way that you can phrase the tefillah is, you know, you have that gift. So, Koiva Amar, he stood there and he said, Bo Rov Shlishis Bamayim, Zuchor Barachim, Ta'inu Me'acharecha, Ki'isha Mibaila, Al Taz Nechenu, Ka'os Me'mara. Also, seems to rhyme almost. They're standing by the river, and he says, Bo Rov Shlishis, Rava, who's the greatest of his generation, he's equivalent to one-third, unclear what it means, one-third of humanity, one-third of Klal Yisrael, one-third of the world. The world is divided into three different portions in ancient cartography. You have one-third, which is water, one-third, which is desert, and one-third, which is habitable. So he's equivalent to all of the parts of the world where anyone can live and all the people living there. What does it say? Yeah, and it's in the Kinas also, adopting that pasuk, right? Shlishia. Okay, so he made this tefillah. Rava is standing by the river, and Hashem, even though we have gone astray like a woman from her husband, don't reject us like the bitter waters that such a woman has to drink, the sota. Okay? And obviously he was saying, let the waters that we're about to pass be favorable to us so that we can get across safely. Okay, in the parentheses over there you have a simon, a list of names, because these are, we're going to have a string of stories about what happened. Each one of these individuals died. So that was the way that they remembered it, because there was a string of Chanan, Yochanan, Zerah, Abba, Yaakov, Yossi, Shmuel, Chia, Menachem, simon. Okay, this is the simon for the stories that are about to come. That's how the mnemonic to help them remember it. Okay. Here we go. Rav Chanan Chasanei Debei Nasiya Hava. Rav Chanan was a son-in-law. He was from the house of the Nasi. Lo Kahavalei Bani, he didn't have any children. Bo Rachma, he davened Bahavalei, and one day he was blessed with a child. Hahu Yom Dahavalei Nach Nafshei. Unfortunately, the day that he was given that child, he also died. Pasach Aleihu Sabdana. So the person who was eulogizing at the funeral said, Simcha Letuga Ne'epacha. Happiness was turned over to sadness. Sason viyago nidbaku, joy and anguish have come together, have coincided, because the birth of the child and the loss of his father. Beis simchaso nenach, at the time of his happiness, he groaned. Beis chaninaso avad chanino, at the time that Hashem gave him this gift of a child, he, the one who davened on behalf of that child, also passed away. I think that might be a reference to Chana. Because when Chana comes back with Shmuel after davening in the Mishkan, so she says to Eli, right, this is the child. How's it supposed to go? Is that what it says? Okay. So my mistake. Okay, good. All right. Asiku le Chanan al Shmei. And they called him Chanan al Shmei, following the name of his father, but not exactly. His father's name was Chanan, and they called him Chanan. Mm-hmm. And this is probably one of the bases for the practice we have. God forbid someone has an untimely death. Some people say if a person died below the age of 60, then you should not name a child after that individual, at least not to give him the exact same name. As we see, they change it up. So if the person's name was Avram, they'll change it to Avram Moshe or something like that. So it isn't identical.
Oh, yeah, altar sometimes.
Yeah, or Chaim or something like that. But we avoid, it's considered not a good siman to name someone precisely after another individual who had an untimely death. Mm-hmm. Okay, one more. Kinach Nafshe, Rabbi Yochanan, when Rabbi Yochanan died, Pasul Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar, Kosh Hayom Yisrael, Kiyom Bo Hashemesh B'Tzaraim. This day is as difficult for Klal Yisrael as if the sun would set in the afternoon, or maybe it's referring to a solar eclipse or something like that, where darkness has descended upon light. And it'll be on that day. This is talking about the death of Yoshio, who was also a great leader in Klal Yisrael, great king, who brought everyone back to took him away from Avodah Zarah and restored the religiosity of the people. It's also referred to as the day that the sun went dark in the middle of the day. So just one reference over here. There's another Gemara that says, based on a pasuk in Koheles, the Ubo Hashemesh v'Zarach Hashemesh. The sun set and the sun rose. And the Gemara says that historically, there were great individuals who were born on the days that other leaders died. And that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps keeps things going. Dor Holech, Dor Ba. But there's a promise that when one generation ends, Hashem's already putting in motion the leaders of the next generation as well. Biyom Shemei's Rebbe, on the day that Rebbe died, who was born? I forgot to go on Ksubis, I think. I'm going blank. But Rebbe obviously was the leader at the time. And when he died, Hashem was already putting things in motion for the next generation. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Everyone on Zoom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. He was a eulogizer.